From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Rochester has many wonderful music schools, all filled with talented young musicians. One of our hidden gems is the Canuck School of Musical Artistry, which was started 22 years ago. The school has grown from a handful of kids studying in Alice Canuck's apartment to over 200 students with about 20 educators based in a studio on South Clinton Avenue. Today on Backstage Pass, we'll meet some of the students and faculty of the Canuck School, hear them play, and talk about the changes still to come. It's the new generation of musicians next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. The Canuck School has a summer program every summer, and so I thought I would take advantage of that and invite the school and some of their wonderful students in to talk about the school and themselves, and yeah, we'll hear a little music as well. Joining us today, well, our first round of introductions will be Alice Canuck. You might suggest that she is the founder of the school.
Hello.
Great to have you here, Alice.
Great to be here.
It's great to have you, and it's also great to have the artistic director, Andrew Barnhart.
Hello.
And Ben Proctor also joins us today. He's a guitarist and a multi-instrumentalist guy. Hi, Ben.
Great to be here, Julia.
So a little brief history of the school, Alice.
Well, the school started because I... being a Rochester native, decided to return to my hometown after being away for about 10 years. And when I came back, it was with the idea of starting a school. So I started it in an apartment and then moved into someone else's house and then into my own house and then eventually into the building that we now have.
You were a graduate of the Eastman School of Music. Where did you go? You said you were away. Where did you go after you graduated?
I went to New York City for about 10 years, and I taught at the Third Street Music School Settlement.
So why was it important for you to come back to Rochester?
Family.
Above and beyond all else, you actually have spent a little bit of time studying with Suzuki, and Suzuki immediately, right? The actual gentleman?
Yes. I was very fortunate. It was late in his life. I got to meet him when he was 84, and then I did also go back and meet with him again when he was 94.
Yeah, here you're known as Mozart's mother in that part of the world.
It was one of the biggest compliments of my life, absolutely.
Andy, you went to the Eastman, well, you're at the Eastman now, but what initially brought you to Rochester?
Initially, I came to Rochester to go to Eastman to do a master's degree, and then I stayed for a doctorate degree, which I have not finished because I'm still working so hard. I found the Canuck School, and I stayed because of that.
You've worked in many different groups in Rochester. We've seen you in all kinds of things, everything from the Rochester Philharmonic to Gibbs and Maine,
right,
and others now. Is it hard to be a part-time musician in this town?
No. It's difficult because there are a lot of musicians in this town, but there is a huge amount of opportunity of all sorts of different kinds of music.
Well,
to find all different opportunities to perform.
Well, in this group of classical teachers, we have an outlier, and that is Ben Proctor. You actually started loving jazz.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I grew up in Connecticut, New Haven, and when I was in high school, I think my freshman year of high school, I started playing in a band, what was called Bassology. It later turned into the Afro-Semitic Experience, which is still a band down there. I haven't played with them in years, but I learned in that group. And then I moved to New York City, and somebody left a banjo in the studio that I was using, and I started plunking around on it, and it was like, you know, the sword and the stone. And I just loved playing it, and I started sort of committed myself to learning all about American folk music and American traditional music. I took that to SUNY Geneseo to study with James Kimball, who's an ethnomusicology professor there. And then I went to Eastman to get a degree in music education after that.
You are quoted as saying, teaching music is a high art. Would you like to expand on that?
I believe that with all my heart. I think that just like artists want to inspire people to understand the world differently, to love better, I think that teachers, and especially music teachers, want to do the same thing. We want to help people to love music more and understand themselves and the world more through teaching. And I think that it is a high calling, and it's something that can have a really powerful effect on people's lives and the world.
We're going to be hearing some of the results of this high art that is the teaching of music at the Canuck School today. And we begin with a family band, actually, the Jabisky Trio. We'll be listening to violinist Amaris Jabisky. Chester is another violinist, and Dara is the cellist. They'll be playing something that the Canuck School is really kind of a cornerstone of what you do, which is improvisation. It's an improvisation in E minor on Backstage Pass.
Thank you.
The Jabisky Trio, Amaris, Chester, and Dara, yes, all siblings, with improvisation in E minor on Backstage Pass. We are live in Studio E, and the Canuck School of Musical Artistry is our spotlight today. I'd like to meet you, I'd like you to meet two members of the Canuck School, one a teacher, the other a pupil. Our teacher is Dr. Jacqueline Cordova Arrington.
Hello.
Nice to have you here. And a pianist that you will hear a little bit later on in the show, Michael Bloom.
Hello.
Hi, Michael. So tell me your age.
I'm 17.
17 years old. So where do you go to school?
I'm actually homeschooled.
You're homeschooled. So you are giving plenty of rehearsal time or plenty of practice time, I assume?
In theory, yes.
How much do you practice a day?
I try to go for between 1.5 to 3 hours.
3 hours?
Sometimes, yes.
Oh, my.
But a lot of times closer to two.
That is dedication, I must say. So what are your plans?
I'm thinking the most I'd do in music would be to minor in music. Still trying to figure it out, but that's my plan right now, is to minor in music.
How'd you come across the Canuck School?
So I started taking lessons when I was about 7, and I was just with some teacher just out of her home, and then she moved pretty early on. And my mom reached out to the homeschooling community, and it was Scarlett Miles recommended the Canuck School to us because her kids had been going there for years. So, went there, liked it, and been there ever since.
Do you like it?
Yes, I do.
What is it about the school that's special to you?
It's a very welcoming environment. It's very relaxed. You feel very at home when you're there, and you're given a lot of opportunities to do lots of things that other music schools just don't really offer.
As you might gather, the name Dr. Jacqueline Cordova Arrington would mean that somebody has a Fulbright, or has a doctorate, rather. You just got your doctorate from the Eastman School of Music with Benita Boyd. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you, as a doctorate in flute, could probably teach anywhere you wanted. Why did you choose the Canuck School?
Well, it's a really fantastic question. I recently moved from New York City. I was actually, while I was studying at Eastman, I was working in New York City as a part of an ensemble called Ensemble Connect. And that ensemble, I was the resident flutist for it. It was the resident ensemble at Carnegie Hall. And so what I had to do there was I actually performed at Carnegie, but then I also participated in a school partnership. So while I was there, I reflected on a lot of things about, you know, what my role was as a musician and as an educator. And just this idea of connecting was really, really vital to me and to my own personal mission. So my husband works for RTS. So I moved back to Rochester in the fall. And I was looking for opportunities to connect with musicians in the area. And I was doing a Google search, and I found the Canuck School online. And I was just really moved by, the kinds of improvisation that they're doing and the different programs that they have. So in any event, that's one of the reasons why I think that the school is really dedicated to community and connecting. And that's something that I'm about.
We're glad that you're with us today. We're going to hear you performing a little bit later on as well, Jacqueline. Back to music we go with our two youngest members of our ensemble today. We have a 10-year-old Kylie Huang. We have 9-year-old Ryan Schaefer. And we have, from the faculty, considerably older than that, or at least slightly older than that, guitarist Eric Gibelieu. They'll be performing an Ave Maria by Saint-Saëns. This is Backstage Pass. Thank you.
Sassol's Ave Maria. That was with Kylie Huang, the violinist. The other violinist is Ryan Schaefer, and we'll meet both of them in a bit. Eric Gibbleyou, the guitarist, is on the faculty, and we'll speak with all of them. But now it's time to speak with our improvisational trio, the Jabisky Trio. We have our 16-year-old Amaris. Hello.
Hi.
And we have Chester, who's 14, also a violinist.
Hello.
And last but not least, Dara, who is our cellist.
Hello.
So that was an improvisation, which would lead me to believe that it's never the same twice. Is that right, Amaris?
That is completely right. The beginning, we have something that we usually do, and then we follow an outline, but everything in between is just completely improvised.
So how is that taught, Alice?
Well, we start our kids very young. We start them as soon as they come into the program with improvisation. Within a week of having an instrument in their hands, the kids are improvising. And one of the first things they actually learn to do is play over a bass line. So what these guys were doing today was they had created a bass line of their own, and they do that often. They love to play together, this family, which is wonderful. And they were improvising over that bass line in various forms.
So, Chester, there aren't dueling violins in your household?
Yes, there are.
Yeah, who's the better violinist?
If I were to be honest, I'd have to say my sister. She's been playing longer. And
Yep. There's nothing more to say.
And then the stranger in the strange land here, the cellist. So actually, it always begins with you, Dara.
Yes.
And then it goes from there. Now, I have a question. It's going to be a dumb question. So please get ready for the dumb question. How do you know when to stop?
I actually have an outline for most of my bass lines. I follow a pattern of, okay, now I play these quarter notes, and then I play these eighth notes, and I just follow that pattern until we're done. Either that, or we just improvise the ending.
So sometimes you just don't know when you're going to stop. Is that right, Chester?
That is definitely correct.
So you're 18 years old. What are your plans, Dara?
I am going to New England Baptist College in August.
Congratulations. And what are you going to study there?
I'm going to study music.
You are. So what's the plan here? I'll ask all of you. You kind of raised your hand over there. So Amaris, where are you going to go? What do you want to do? Do you want to fiddle for a living?
I'm looking at going to Pensacola Christian College in Florida when I graduate, and I want to go for music, for violin, and I'm hoping to be able, once I'm out, to get married and raise a family and then teach out of my home.
That's very nice. That's a nice plan indeed. And what about you, Chester?
I honestly currently do not know, but it's something it's definitely I think about a lot. And if it's affiliated with music, I'm fairly certain I would enjoy that a lot.
So what does music give you, Chester?
Well, different areas of music, CAD. I feel like it's helped me open up a lot socially and just kind of gets me to get used to others more. And it's always something that I've always enjoyed.
Dara, do you guys play out at all?
Play out, sorry.
Like in contra dances, or do you do concerts or recitals?
Not too often. We do play at our church a lot. We arrange hymns a lot, and we play for our church.
That's nice. That's nice indeed. Well, congratulations on an excellent improv and your future plans. You've taught them well, Alice.
Thank you.
This is Backstage Pass, and one of the things, if you haven't noticed, that seems to be coming up is fiddling. And we're going to be listening to a little bit of fiddling now with two people. We've already talked to Ben Proctor. Now Ben is going to show us his stuff with his guitar. And Daphne Pickens, who is an alumna of the Canuck School of Music. She teaches. She's a violinist. You will be meeting her a little bit later on. And they have a fiddle set for us. It begins with Dear Lisa, and then one of Daphne's own pieces. It's a tune on Paganini's 16th Caprice. A little bit of picking, a little bit of fiddling on Backstage Pass. Thank you. a traditional fiddle set for Dear Lise, a traditional song, and then Daphne Pickens' tune on Paganini's 16th Caprice. Daphne Pickens was our violinist, our guitarist, Ben Proctor, and we will be back to hear her work, another piece that Daphne wrote. She'll be playing some solo coming up very shortly here on Backstage Pass. But we mentioned our youngsters who were here, our youngest players, and we want to meet them. We have Kylie Wong. Hi, Kylie.
Hello.
Nice to have you here. And Ryan Schaefer. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
And we have their guitarist, Eric Gibbleview, as well.
Hello.
And I know that you've been working with them as well, Andy, and sort of talking to them and getting them ready. So I know you're all of 9 years old. When did you start playing your violin, Ryan?
I started playing violin when I was in first grade.
And? Do you like it?
Yes, I like it.
Why?
I like learning new songs, but I don't always like to practice.
Truth comes out. And what about you, Kylie? Do you like to practice?
Yes, I like to practice.
There's always one in the crowd like you.
We might have more than one here.
And how old were you when you started?
I was like 6 or 5, so I started in kindergarten.
Why do you like the violin, Kylie?
Well, I like the sound that it makes and also how you play it.
Let's talk about teaching youngsters, if we have a moment, Andy. When you get a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old, they clearly have to be taught slightly differently than a 15 or 16-year-old. So what's the technique?
Well, I think the first mistake that a lot of people do is handle them with kid gloves. Like, these guys know if they play something out of tune, it's okay to let them know that they did, because they can work to make it better. It's something that we do at our school, is we challenge our students, no matter what age they are. We give them music that is playable for them, but will stretch their technique. And it's our job to nurture them and give an environment where they feel safe and happy to experiment and happy to fail if that happens, so that they can grow and become better musicians because of that.
Eric Gibble, you played with Kylie and Ryan. You actually started with a saxophone. You've got a guitar in your hand, but that's not where you started.
Oh, that was a long time ago, Julia. Yeah. I started in middle school on tenor saxophone, and it was about the same time I actually started guitar as well, and it didn't take long for guitar to supersede saxophone.
Yeah, but that's because that's where the girls are.
You're so right.
And so sooner or later, going through, you know, heavy metal bands and so on, you ended up playing classical music, which is, that's quite the trip. It must have stuck with you. You're going for your doctorate now.
I am indeed, yeah. I just finished my first year of my doctoral studies at the Eastman School of Music. But it's not such an unusual route for classical guitarists, actually. A lot of us start in places very far from the classical world. But I'm happy to be here. I look forward to continuing at Eastman over the next couple of years.
Well, tell me about working with 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds. Again, this must be quite different than working with a teenager.
It is. You know, all students are different, not even depending on age. But with younger students, it's great. They seem to be faster learners in a lot of ways, which is a lot of fun. I suppose it takes a little bit more care, but they're an awful lot of fun. So I certainly enjoy working with them.
It's nice to have you here today, and thank you for joining us. We're going to go back to music now with, as promised, a piece by Daphne Pickens called Six-Word Sonata No. 1. I will lay out what those 6 words are, and then we'll be able to actually talk to Daphne after this about what those 6 words mean. A 6-word Sonata No. 1 by Daphne Pickens. The first movement is Something Disturbing. The second movement is Stuck. And finally, Inside Me. 6-word Sonata, Daphne Pickens plays live on Backstage Pass from Studio E. Daphne Pickens playing her own six-word sonata number one. Silent applause in the room. I'm Julia Figueres, and we are celebrating the Kanak School of Musical Artistry. Today on Backstage Pass, Daphne, I remember you from your days as the concertmaster for the Rochester Philharmonic Youth Orchestra.
Hello.
And yep. And here you are in a whole new setting. Can you tell us a little bit about your six-word sonata?
So at Oberlin, we have a month off where we do a thing called winter term. And for my winter term project, I spent that month writing this sonata. And I decided to kind of go off of Hemingway's six-word memoirs and wrote my own six-word memoir. So actually, this piece is my musical memoir as of 2 years ago.
As of 2 years ago. So what was stuck inside of you at the time that you felt needed to come out?
I don't like to talk about what the words mean necessarily. I like people to try to relate in their own way and just to be not biased. So
it's an interesting piece. It sounds like there are at least two of you up there playing. That's the technique of being able to pluck and bow at the same time strikes me as a little difficult, is it?
Yep.
So we are going to tell the big secret here, which is that Alice Kanak is your mom, and she was your first and continuing teacher as well. So you can speak about her if she's not in the room. Is she a good teacher?
Oh, yes. Yes. I stopped listening to her around 16 due to, like, being her daughter and such. So I studied with Thomas Rogers afterwards, but my mom kept helping me, coaching me along the way to college.
Are you listening to her again?
I'm trying to. Yeah.
We decided it was very important to have a mother-daughter relationship and not a teacher-student relationship, which is a bit different.
Well, I know a lot of musical parents who don't teach their own kids because they feel not necessarily a smart move.
Right.
So, Daphne, now you teach at the school during the summer?
Yes, I teach at the music camps, and right now I'm subbing for some teachers over the summer.
And you're also a contra dancer.
Yes, I am a contra dancer and a contra dance fiddler.
Well, that's hard because you can't fiddle and dance at the same time.
No. But I can get hired and play sometimes, and that's nice.
Is there a big difference for you, Daphne, between your classical work and your contra dance work?
Yeah, a huge difference. It's two completely different cultures that I've grown up in. So it's interesting how I can keep them both going. When I'm at school, I kind of let the folk music side go a bit, but at least once a month I get out and play some fiddle.
Do you hold your bow differently? Do you have different violins?
Nope. I just play the different style.
So do you have a preference for one or the other?
Nope.
What do they do for each other then? Because these two worlds live together, and they seem to live pretty harmoniously inside of you. So they must be helping each other. How do they help each other?
They give me some variety. I think they've kept my creative, having fiddle has given me like a whole new perspective on playing things like Bach and stuff. I think that it's mostly CAD also that helps me with my musicality. So CAD, fiddle, and classical together.
And of course, you know, there was a period of time when Bach was fiddling, so...
Yes.
Not that far apart. So let's have one last piece of music. I know that you and your mom have to join the group for a piano quintet by Elfrida Andre. Our flutist that we talked to earlier, Dr. Jacqueline Cordova Arrington, will be performing, as will Daphne Pickens, the hardest working woman in this backstage pass. Alice Kanak is our violist, Andrew Barnhart, Andy is the cellist, and Michael Bloom, who we talked to a little earlier, will be playing the piano. It's a piano quintet in E minor on Backstage Pass. Thank you.
Thank you.
On Backstage Pass, we heard Alfreda Andre's Piano Quintet in E minor. The flutist was Dr. Jacqueline Cordova Arrington. Daphne Pickens, the violin. We heard Michael Bloom play the piano. And Alice Canuck, who is the executive director of the Canuck School of Music, and Andrew Barnhart, Andy, the artistic director of the Canuck School of Music. Andrew gets the cello, Alice the viola. So back in the chairs you go. What is your school philosophy, Alice?
My school philosophy is that we develop the character of each child through the study of the art of making music. And we have an approach that includes literacy, musicality, and technical facility. And we stress those 3 points through our classes.
How do you choose your faculty?
I want to say instinct. I think I have a very good instinct for really terrific people. Obviously, extremely talented people. We're very fortunate in this town that a lot of very talented people do come through. But I always meet with them personally.
You are called the artistic director. That's the official title, Andy. So what's that mean?
So this is a new title for me. We're starting the next year of finishing my first year of doing that job. So basically, Alice and I are figuring out what exactly that means. So Alice has run the school not on her own. She's had plenty of help, but she's done it all by herself for a long time. So we are slowly dividing up that job. So my job is slowly becoming working with parents and working with students and figuring out the schedule and what classes we're going to offer and still sometimes doing what Alice tells me to do.
It was the number one. Maybe it was the number one lesson that I learned when I was studying stage management in college, and that's delegation is a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Delegation is very important. So what makes the Canuck School different from other music schools?
I love that question because we do have something that we think is really unique to us, which is the Creative Ability Development Program.
You've heard some students talk about CAD already in their interviews, and I'm sure there are some listeners going, what is CAD?
Right, and CAD is basically a method that I developed over 30 years ago in New York City. It's why I went to Japan. It's why I worked with Suzuki. Suzuki's nickname, Mozart's Mother, came from his appreciation of the Creative Ability Development Method at that time. And it is something that we offer all our students, and it allows them to really be uniquely expressive on their instruments. It's different from all other ways of teaching musicality.
When you started the school 22 years ago, was this what you envisioned?
Absolutely. I'm thrilled.
So what is the next step?
We are growing. We are becoming a nonprofit.
Very soon.
Within about a week, actually. Yeah. We will officially be a nonprofit organization.
Which means what?
It means that we are now a source for people from around the world to come and study the method. It means that we can grow and expand our building.
Yeah, we have a project that has been designed for a few years.
Right.
We've just been going through the motions, and now we will hopefully start raising some money and make that happen.
Make that happen, exactly. But it really means that the philosophy of the school can be shared around the world, and it frees me up to do more of the writing that I do. Andy is taking over a lot more of the nitty-gritty so that I can be free to do that. I can be free to travel, even though I do still, and I will continue to teach many days a week, but it frees me up to be able to do that.
Well, congratulations on all of your successes, and here's to another 22 years at least for the Canuck School of Musical Artistry. I'm Julia Figueres, our executive director and director. Our executive producer and director is Gene Fisher. Our audio technician is Andrew Croucher with help from Robert Braden. Our intern is Joshua Jarima. I am your producer and host, Julia Figueres, with many thanks to Alice Canuck and Andrew Barnhart and all of the wonderful players in this room today. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.